give my life and all I have, and I want to know, will you be there?
Hello, Carl.
Yes?
Hi, let me introduce everybody to you first, all right? I want to welcome everybody. It's the Michael Slate Show, and we're operating in difficult circumstances, but really, really need to get this out, and I think it's a very important show that we have going. And basically, what I want to let people know is that the run is going to be, we're going to be talking with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party, and we're going to spend quite a bit of time with Carl because he's got quite a bit to say. And then after that, we'll be listening to some folks who made a very, very powerful film, and we'll be talking with them about that film called Nazreen. All right, so those, and we may have a little bit more after that, but those are the two things we got going now, and so I'm going to jump in and talk with Carl. Carl, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
Fine as you can do in the midst of a global pandemic and trying to ensure that a fascist regime does not cling to the White House.
Yep, and I'm joining you there, and I'm also, I have my own little claim to whatever going on inside my little office here. It's just, it's amazing how quickly things can change like this and how important it is that people recognize what's happening and what needs to be done. So let's jump into this, and we can spend, take your time with this and a lot of different angles, but I wanted to start off very quickly with this. You've been part of and actually playing a very important role in terms of fighting against Trump's attempts to pull off a coup to maintain his fascist rule. And the most dangerous manifestation of him planning to do this is the mobilizing of Nazis of various stripes. That came out just the last weekend, and it broke out just as the new year began. Let's talk about what this was and where things are at the moment. First, let's talk about what this was, and then we can talk about where are things at in the moment.
Yeah, what this was an attempted fascist coup. I mean, you had the fascist in chief calling on his MAGA mobs to swarm into D.C. and to rally the day that the Electoral College vote that had been certified and all like that through all the states that showed that Biden had won the election, Trump had lost. Well, he called on his people to come to D.C. for a wild rally. He spoke to them, he addressed them, and he said, we're going to march down to the Capitol. We have to be strong. His lawyer said, this is going to be trial by combat. Inside, he had most of the Republicans in the House of Representatives and maybe a quarter of the Republicans in the Senate prepared to try to overturn the results of the election. This was the two-pronged battering ram that he had. And when he called his MAGA mobs to go down there, they went down there and they stormed the Capitol. That's what you saw. This was a fascist coup, an attempt to overturn an election that he had lost and to keep the Trump-Pence fascist regime in power. That's what this was. It did not succeed in that aim. They were only able to delay the ratification of the results of the vote for a few hours because wee hours of Thursday morning, they ratified Biden's victory. So all legal hurdles to that have been overcome, although we should note that Trump is still in the White House. He's still the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military for like 11, 12 more days. And even though he did that hostage video, that's what I call it. He looked like a hostage being told, here's the statement you read in it where he said he was committed to a transfer of power to a new administration. We cannot rest content and like, okay, it's over and done with, because he's got those 11, 12 days in. He may try to use them in ways to upset all of this, including around the world or possibly in this country. But even if he doesn't, even if he does leave on January 20th. That battering ram that he tried to use on Wednesday is still in existence. The MAGA mobs, they have gone home, but they are still around, and they have been tempered and steeled in that attempt to seize power. The fascists in Congress, I mean, many of them even voted to overturn the election after the attempt to storm the Capitol building had ended in defeat. They still voted to overturn the thing, even though there was no legal basis, there were no facts, no evidence. They still tried to deny that Trump had lost the election and Biden won. Those people aren't going anywhere. And if Biden thinks he's going to reach across the aisle and get some renewed bipartisanship, he does not know what he is dealing with. Because these people, some of them decided to back away from the desperate attempt to keep Trump in power, but that doesn't mean that they're backing away from the fascist agenda that they shared with Trump and looking for ways to carry it forward with Trump out of the White House and ways to come back and try to come at it again. And we just have to look at the history of fascism worldwide. These people don't let their fortunes rise or fall on whether they've won an election or not. You know, they rise and fall on whether they're in position to seize power. They could come back in future elections, or they could come back in between elections and make a go at this. And whichever way they go at it in the period after a Biden administration takes office, they're going to do everything they can to obstruct it and to create the conditions for fascism to build on the advances that it's already achieved, both in terms of policies that they have already gotten enacted, in terms of positions in the government that they've won, whether that's in Congress or judges appointed to the federal bench. These fascists are here to stay, and we have to recognize that and act on it.
Yeah, it's extremely important what you're saying. You know, one of the things I kept thinking about in relation to all this is that, you know, you are talking about it's not so easy to just sort of like say it and then just walk away from it, because there is, you know, you are talking about the most dangerous manifestation of Trump's plans are actually mobilizing Nazis for various stripes and breaking out just as the new year began. They ran this, and it's this whole thing of there's a certain momentum that's been set loose in this that has a really it's stupid to say chilling effect. It actually should have a just horrifying effect on people, and then people thinking about, well, what the hell do we do about this? But I'd like to talk that a little bit more, because it's not just sitting and saying, okay, well, this is what's happening. You know, even just like you know, I think what you laid out was very important and very good. But I think there's also, you know, for a lot of people, there's a need to understand that this is a qualitative jump beyond where things have been, and we're talking about Nazis.
Yeah, I mean, people need to really grasp what this was. These were probably tens of thousands of people who felt like there is no legitimacy to anyone but Donald Trump or someone of his ilk sitting in the seat of the most powerful position in the world, the President of the United States. They didn't care about how many votes anybody got, how many states and electoral votes anybody won. Their standard bearer was the only legitimate one. And it goes back to his thing at the Republican National Convention in 2016 of, I alone can fix this. I alone can deal with these problems. And when you looked at the people and the paraphernalia that they brought with them, it was noteworthy that they had Trump flags, American flags, and Confederate flags. What they did was unprecedented in modern American history, but there is a direct line that goes through the history of this country, right up to these MAGA mobs and the fascist stormtroopers who stormed the Capitol. and that line runs through the white mobs that mobilized to try to stop black children from integrating schools back in the 1950s and 60s, the KKKers who bombed churches and assassinated civil rights leaders and activists in that period. You could take it back to 1898 in Wilmington, North Carolina, when white mobs rose up and drove out the elected governor and other state officials because they had won their election based upon multinational, multiracial voting bloc. Some of them were black, some of them were white, but it was black and white votes that got them into office. And this mob just rose up and drove them out of the state house. We could go back through massacre after massacre that occurred in the overthrow of Reconstruction and then trace it right back to the Civil War and the Confederacy. So that's who these people are. They are fascists, they are Nazis, but they are American Nazis, and they come wrapping themselves in white supremacy, male supremacy, and America number one chauvinism, and also wrapping themselves in the American flag, the Bible, but apparently some of them can't put down that Confederate flag. They still got to grab it and wrap themselves up in it to feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who is being welded into a fighting force to carry this fascist movement forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess I wanted to say a little bit on this chilling effect point.
Go ahead, go.
It is real important that people see this for what it is, recognize the danger, but not be intimidated into passivity. And that's been a big debate, because leading into the various Proud Boy and other fascist mobilizations in D.C., there have been big debates about whether people should respond in any way. And a view that, frankly, had the dominant position, at least among activists in D.C., was that it would be wrong to come out and do any kind of mobilization in opposition to this, that that is what the fascists would want, et cetera, et cetera. And there was just a lot of passivity in relation to it, and that meant that the fascists dominated the political square, the public square, and the political discussion and discourse in this period. Now, on the positive end, after things erupted on Wednesday, there have been protests across the country where progressive people who reject everything the Trump-Pence regime represents and the fascism that's at its core took to the streets. I mean, there were a few thousand people who marched in Brooklyn, New York, which is where I happen to be right now, not, you know, tooting my hometown or anything, just noting that. No, and see, this is the way that people need to respond, and that's why Refuse Fascism has called for nationwide actions, rallies, press conferences, other forms, you know, in recognizing the pandemic. In some cases, they're going to be, we did a press conference that was a virtual press conference because we didn't want to bring everybody together around that. Our protests on Saturday are going to be socially distanced. Some of them are going to be car caravans, different things like that. But people have to demonstrate their rejection of all of this, the fact that they refuse to accept it. And the slogans that Refuse Fascism is raising is Trump Pence out now. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And we're calling on people to come out and to bring their own slogans, you know, because Black Lives Matter is a very appropriate slogan to be raised in this. Hate has no home here is also a very appropriate slogan. But people cannot allow themselves to be chilled into passivity because it sets the wrong terms for going forward around this, including going forward if, as is most likely what's going to occur, Trump does leave on January 20th. There still needs to be an active rejection of everything that he stands for, because there are going to be people in the government who are continuing to fight for it. And Wednesday showed that there's going to be a lot of forces on the ground all across the country who are still with that. I mean, you can't always go by the polls, but a poll was done by one nationwide news organization, and its results were that by a small margin, a plurality of Republican voters supported storming the Capitol. And tie that back to the fact that 75 million people voted for this fascist, and it was not economic anxiety that did it. It was an embrace of the white supremacy, male supremacy, and vicious America number one chauvinism that's driving that.
Mm-hmm. You know, now tell me this, Carl, because, you know, just coming off of that, too, it's like, look, you know, this thing about the, you know, you've talked about the big divide, black people getting rights, women getting rights, and so on, and how this opened the door. And the fascists actually went just nuts over this. I mean, it was completely different. The fascists, they want a completely different kind of rule. And it's what that's what burst out last Wednesday, and that's what's actually still carrying on. And this is not sort of just a bunch of, you know, bumble-headed morons that come in from, you know, sleeping in the haystacks. They're actually, these are people who actually are, you know, from various realms, from various parts of society, who are looking at themselves as having been screwed. You know, we've had it too much. We've been played too long. We are, you know, these people are getting this. These people are getting this. We're getting nothing. We're just out there trying to survive. And, you know, you look at this, and you have that grouping of people. And then you also have all those, like, for instance, I was watching this when all the various, basically, the officials came in from the government to stand with the Nazis. I mean, this is crazy. When you're looking at that, and then you realize that again, what's the connection there? What is it when you have all these people who are either from the House of, you know, either House or what that they're, you know, involved with, or just coming out because they happen to think that people have been screwed, and quite frankly, a lot of them think white people have been screwed. Although that there has been some, you know, expansion of who they include, but there are all these, and it was very heavy to see all these people who were actually part of the government. What, they have 200 people or something like that, that were standing up, and they never turned around and said, after all the stuff that got loose, they never turned around and said, oops, maybe we made a mistake. Instead, they stood up there, and by standing there, they backed up what had happened. Let's talk about that a little.
Yeah, and it was 150 members of the House of Representatives and 7 senators who voted for overturning the election after the storming of the Capitol. So this is real. And look, we need to dig into this. There is a sense, frankly, very broadly among far too many white people, that anything that's done to lessen the oppression of black people, to lessen the targeting of immigrants, to lessen going after LGBTQ people, any steps in that direction takes things away from white people or takes things away from straight people. And people need to look at it and say, what do they benefit by someone else being subjugated? And is that where they want to stand in this? We also need to look at the fact that in the spring and summer, after the murder of George Floyd, large numbers of people took to the streets to say this was not to be allowed. This had to be stopped. White supremacy needed to be dealt with. And many, many of those people were white people and younger white people in particular. So we need to see that there are different signs of potential to go in different directions, but it's going to take some active work to get them to go in the right direction. The right direction being beating back this fascist movement, isolating it, winning people away from it. And that's not going to be done by reaching across the aisle and trying to come to compromises with it. It has to be done on the basis of putting out what's right, what's wrong, and standing up against it. So
go ahead.
I think that's very important. One thing I want to bring in is there's a deeper discussion that needs to be had in terms of where this fascism came from, what its roots are. We can't get into all of that here today, but I really encourage people to go to the website revcom.us to read the works of Bob Avakian, to watch the film of a talk that he did, The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go, In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America, A Better World is Possible, and the statement that he issued on August 1st on the need to drive out the fascist Trump-Pence regime and the fundamental need for revolution. People can go to the website revcom.us and dig into that. And that's one of the things that many, many people need to do in order to be able to go forward on the best basis on this. They need to engage some of the best work that's been done on the nature of fascism, where it comes from, its roots in this country, and how to fight it. And that's the work of Bob Avakian. The other thing is people need to go to the website refusefascism.org to get tied in to the activities that are going on. And like I said, nationwide protests, cities across the country, press conferences, rallies, car caravans, under the theme of Trump Pence out now, and in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. Because it is going to take active resistance. Mass, nonviolent resistance is the form that it needs to take. But it does need to be active. People do need to be out. People need to be in the streets. We can't surrender the public square to either the fascist or to the people who think through conciliation with the fascist they can take things back to normal. Because one, that's not going to work. And two, we need to not settle for going back to normal. Because normal was no damn good. I mean, the white supremacy, the male supremacy, the American number one chauvinism that the Trump-Pence regime intensified, the attacks, the devastation of the environment that Trump presided over intensifying, all of that was going on before him. And if we go back to normal, it will continue after him. We got to go forward and work on the kind of world where all of these horrors are no more. And, you know, we in the Revolutionary Communist Party have been doing that and are very firm that it's going to take an actual revolution to do that once and for all. And that's been what's driving us in our stance against the fascist Trump-Pence regime and its attempts to overturn an election and keep fascism in power here. And when we stand together with all kinds of people, you could look at the press conference that we did yesterday to get a sense of the kindness of people, the reverend of the church where the Proud Boys had ripped down the Black Lives Matter banner in D.C. and torched it. Comedians, actors, journalists from different parts of the world. I don't want to get into naming people because I don't remember everybody's name. But go to refusefascism.org. They got all that information there. And people need to get informed, dig into the roots of this, and they need to get involved in resisting it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me find out if we're going to continue, and I want to let people know that you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking with Carl Dix. And people who listen to the show regularly know that Carl is often on the show, and this is a particularly important discussion we're having here because it's actually he's talking about what happened over the last immediate period of time, which I think is, you're safe in saying that fundamental things have been changed or are forcing or are moving towards that change. There's a kind of, you know, there's different forces coming out and moving in different directions and trying to basically, I mean, particularly if you look at how the Nazis are coming out, and they are Nazis, folks. They're not just sort of like upset school kids, you know. This is something that's very, very heavy. And I think it's important that to keep that in mind. So, Carl, I think we can continue on like this for quite a while, and I just want to make sure that I'm not missing something in terms of people trying to get through to us. But I did want to ask you this, because it's something that has been really just bugging the hell out of me. You know, it's sort of like you have this attempted coup, and it's nothing less than that. There's a reorganizing, they're reorganizing the way, not just the immediate thing around D.C. or anything else, but they're actually reorganizing the way that the entire country will be ruled. And this happened on many different levels, and it was also aimed at keeping Trump in power no matter what, which is something when you look at, like, Trump walking around in this very, you know, sort of his eyes just sort of, like, glaring out, and he's like, you know, you don't know what the hell he's thinking. You know, he's probably thinking about, oh, hot dogs, you know, but actually not funny, because it's sort of what he's doing is actually doing things that are going to, you know, basically determine how the entire society falls out in relation to this. That's if he got into it, you know. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit with you, too, because there's this thing of you know, yes, there was an attempted coup. And I don't think people recognize that enough, that there was really this reorganizing that was going on, and it was that Trump actually in some ways, although there's movement against it, but Trump was actually right there in the center of it. And all this stuff coming up, it really does point to a very dangerous situation, more so than we've ever had in the last, you know, at least 50 years, and probably longer than that. And in particular, not just in general, but it's in the way the entire society is structured and the people who live in it, especially the people who have been cast down from the very beginning. You know, and I think it's something that we really have to dig in there, because, you know, yeah. You know as well as I do, there are, you know, this stuff is, it's not just it happens, it fades away, somebody else comes out and says with a voice of reason. I mean, if you're looking at what's going on today, there is no damn voice of reason on that side. This is not something where they're even hiding it. They're actually coming out there and smiling and standing up and dispersing things. And, you know, you look at the police when they burst into the chamber there, and the police giving a high five to all the Nazis that are coming in. You know, this is saying something about what's changing in the society right now.
Yeah, that's an important point, Michael, because it isn't even just a personal thing of Donald Trump getting to stay in the White House longer. It is actually throwing aside the whole way the country has been run. And they're very key indicators of that because, you know, they're supposed to have elections. There's set periods of time for when those elections happen. And there's a lot that they do to make them unequal and unfair. And most of that has been coming, frankly, from the Republican side in terms of the gerrymandering, so that it's possible for the Republicans to have most of the seats in a state legislature or in even at times the U.S. House of Representatives, even though they get far fewer votes. So those things have been going on. But this was an attempt to say it doesn't matter what the results of those elections were. If we don't like them, we should be able to just toss them aside. And then within that, there were very key indicators as well, because in their attempts to get certain key states results thrown out, there was a laser focus on the places where Black people, where Latinos, where Native people were significant parts of the voting population, because they talked about Michigan, they talked about Wisconsin, they talked about Pennsylvania, they talked about Georgia, they talked about Arizona, and there was probably one more that I'm forgetting. In each case, they zeroed in on the major metropolitan areas where the Democrats had run up big advantages in the elections. So the places where they wanted the votes thrown out were places like Detroit, like Milwaukee, like Philadelphia, like Atlanta, all of them places where there are large numbers of Black voters. So they were basically saying that if we lose an election because a lot of Black people vote against us, well, that's illegitimate. And people should think about that and think about the history of this country. And frankly, not the history of the Republican Party from the point of Nixon's Southern strategy and the way that it's gone at trying to limit the ability of black people to even have access to the ballot. And for Arizona, they went after Phoenix and said, this is where all the rigging went down. Phoenix, which has a large Latino population and large numbers of indigenous people. So they're basically saying that these people that we have suppressed, the descendants of the people that we dragged into slavery from Africa, the descendants of the people whose land we stole and carried out a genocide against, the descendants of the people whose land we stole in the war with Mexico, you guys are not voting for us, so your votes are should no longer be considered legitimate. And this was how it was going down as they went at the whole marker of having elections and then having the loser of the election agree to a peaceful transfer of power. That was being thrown out here. And people really need to look at it. They also need to look at the agenda that has been carried out by this regime. And look, large numbers of people took to the streets at various times in opposition to this. You know, when the Muslim ban came down, there were large protests at airports around the country and in other facilities. When the immigrants began to be put in concentration camps in large numbers on the border, and the family separations were happening where you were seeing children torn from their parents' arms. Large numbers of people came out against that. Well, this is also what's at issue here. Is this going to be continued in an intensified way or not? And we could just go through the agenda, the devastation of the environment, even down to his last days in office. Trump is opening up more protected areas of natural resources that had been restricted to things like oil drilling and things like that, like wetlands in different parts of the country. Well, he's moving to open up as much of that as he can before his term ends, if he fails to extend his term to the next one. This is all going down, and this is what people need to get and act to stop. And frankly, they need to get it in terms of understanding where these things come from and that none of them started with Donald Trump. He intensified all of them. He made all of them worse, but they didn't start with him. And if we accept a going back to normal, what that means is that, well, the attacks on immigrants should go back to what they were under the Obama-Biden administration. We should remember that that administration set the record for numbers of people deported. We should also remember, as we look at a week when the federal Department of Justice exonerated the cop who murdered Tamir Rice, and local district attorney in Wisconsin, Kenosha, Wisconsin, exonerated the cop who shot Jacob Blake in the back 7 times. We should look at the fact that, okay, Trump's Department of Justice pulled back on some of the even cosmetic reforms that had been done under Obama's Department of Justice. But when we look at it, Trump's Department of Justice prosecuted no cops for brutalizing or murdering people in its 4 years. But Obama's Department of Justice, and Biden was his vice president, only prosecuted one cop for having killed a black person. That was an officer named Michael Slager in South Carolina, who was caught on videotape shooting Walter Scott in the back as he ran away, as Scott ran away from this cop. And the reason that Obama's Department of Justice took this case on is even though it was very clearly a murder, you know, the guy was running away and the cop is shooting at, calmly walking behind him and shooting at him multiple times and killing him, the state prosecution ended in a mistrial. So they said, look, you got to take this up to the federal level. We can't do anything with this one. And that's the only cop that the Obama Department of Justice prosecuted and got convicted. And just by the way, that cop's lawyers are trying to get him a pardon. And I would not bet against it happening in the near future, because they are looking at, oh, there's an opening here. There is someone who might not see what my client did, shooting a black man in the back as he ran away, as something that really means he should be in prison. No, so people need to look at that, and it takes me back to what I said earlier about, I mean, we in the Revolutionary Communist Party threw ourselves into building a movement of resistance to stop the consolidation of fascism in this country. We were part of forming Refuse Fascism in December of 2016, the month after Trump was elected, and even before he was, you know, the inauguration and he took office, because we saw that fascist rule is something that meant that any attempt to do anything positive, including any attempt at making revolution to get rid of the horrors that this capitalist imperialist system brings down on people, that any attempt to do anything positive, whether it was that, whether it was even just trying to achieve significant reforms that reduce the inequality, reduce some of the suppression that different groups of people suffer, the chances of success at that go way down if fascists are in power. And we also said at the time, fascists sometimes go into power through elections, but it's very, very hard to get them out of power through elections. And people need to recognize that it was not easy to get Trump out of power from just a number of ends. One is the depths to which he was going to go to try to cling to power, which have so far culminated in the attempt Wednesday to storm the Capitol building to stop the ratification of the Electoral College votes. And we saw that, you know, we saw that things could go this way more than 4 years ago. So people need to get this. They need to understand that. They need to understand the nature of fascism and its roots and how to fight it, and they need to get involved in that fight. So again, you know, refusefascism.org, be a part of the protests around the country under the slogans of Trump, Pence out now, and in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And people need to get that now is a time to act, not a time to kind of go relax, say, boy, I'm glad this didn't happen, because it actually did happen. What does it mean that a fascist force was brought to D.C. and encouraged by the president to go and attack the Capitol building? And what does it mean that these people are being firmed up and cohered and organized throughout society, and at the same time, there is a significant portion of the House of Representatives and a number of senators who stand with them? They kind of got their inside and outside game going there. This is something that people cannot go to sleep on. They cannot think, you know, no one can now say that it didn't happen. Well, I guess some people can say that, because there are those forces, you know, fascist forces who are saying it was really Antifa that did that.
Right, yeah.
So let's not say no one can say it, because some people seem to have found the abilities. But anybody who cares anything about reality can't say it didn't happen. But you also definitely should not say it's over and done with. We don't have to worry about it anymore, because it is not over and done with. They are there. They're going to remain there. They're going to be in motion, advancing the same goals that were being advanced by the Trump-Pence regime, only doing it, like I said, if Trump does indeed leave the White House on January 20th, they're going to be working on the same goals without the presidency, but with a significant section of fascist forces inside the government and a very significant mass movement, a mass fascist movement, you know, spread throughout the society. And it goes from, you know, there are some people who are not doing so well who are part of that. You also, I mean, Josh Hawley, the senator who helped to spark this along by being one of the spearheads of the movement to overturn Biden's election. It's a guy who went to Stanford and one of the Ivy League schools, you know, so they got a range of people there. And it also should be noticed that while at the core of a main theme of it is intensified white supremacy, and by far the core and the breadth of it is made up of white people, there also were some gains that were made in bringing people of other nationalities. Trump's percentage of black voters went up. His percentage of Latino voters went up. And I guess one thing that I haven't talked about much, which has a lot to do with this diversification, is the Christian fascist movement that it's at its core. Because it is that fundamentalist Christian religion that solidifies a lot of people behind the open and naked fascism that the Trump-Pence regime has exhibited and enforced over the past 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, Carl, we're going to have to wrap this up, but I wanted to ask you one more thing. Just in the interest of getting out broadly to everybody, can you tell people where they can find what's happening, the source for that, so that they can actually figure out where they stand in relation to this? Can you tell people that?
Yes. Go to the website, refusefascism.org. On its homepage is the call for nationwide protests. You can go through and see what's planned in your area. If you find that nothing is planned in your area, then do something. Organize something yourself and send in reports on it so that people nationwide and even worldwide can see that, yeah, there's a lot of fascists who were unleashed and stormed the Capitol on Wednesday, but then people around the country took to the streets to reject the white supremacy, the male supremacy, and the vicious USA number one chauvinism that was concentrated in what happened on Wednesday. So that's refusefascism.org.
All right, Carl, thank you very much for joining us, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Okay, thank you for having me on again, Michael.
All right. We're going to take a quick minute break or so, just so I can get reorganized, and we'll be right back, so stay tuned.
How can I tell you my truth? Little one, how can I tell you the things I have done? Though I cannot see the sky, you know, I only think of you, and you shine for me more brightly than the sun. And how can I tell you the tears I have shed? Are you still lonely each night in your bed? I could tell you to forget me,
And it's being played because it's part of a very special segment of the show I wanted to have, and a very special film that's been made. And it's an incredibly important thing, and I really apologize to folks for, we got run away with, actually, in terms of the importance of what we were talking about, but I don't want to miss this. And so I want to welcome to the show... And Marcia, I think if that's how you say your name, Marcia Ross, is that your name, Marcia?
Actually, it's Marcia, but that's okay.
Marcia,
that's a common...
okay. You know, every time I know somebody named Marcia and I call them Marcia, they say, no, it's Marcia. So, okay, Marcia, I'm really glad
to meet you.
Okay. And Jeff Kaufman, how are you?
I'm fine. You're right, it's Jeff.
Yeah, okay, all right. And I'm Michael, so... We should go out for dinner sometime. I don't want
to
waste a lot of time, but I want people, you know, because I'm sorry that we had to go through. It was important to get through what we were doing. And basically, I want people to know about the film that you have made. And I saw it, and I was blown away when I saw it. I've seen it twice now. It just took me into a whole other place in terms of understanding what's going on, both the horrors and the actual... You know, the ability of people to stand up against the most horrible things being thrown at them. So let's talk about your film. It's Nasreen. Give people a sense of what it is and what it's about.
Well, it's a documentary about Nasreen Sotoudeh, who's probably the world's most acclaimed human rights activist and political prisoner. She's an Iranian lawyer who's been fighting for years for, you know, religious minorities, people on the death penalty, juveniles, women's rights, an extraordinary woman who time and time again puts herself at risk for others and really sets a bar for, you know, who we are here. The whole film is a reminder of how easy it is for democracy to slip away and how precious it is to hold on to and how people will put themselves at risk for democracy. It was an extraordinary experience because it was almost like filming with Nelson Mandela before he was sent off to Robben Island. Halfway through filming with Nasreen, you know, on the streets, in theaters, at home, in protests, she was arrested and sent to prison. We finished the film after she was arrested, but I've continued to work closely with her and her family. And it's been an extraordinary journey, not just as a film, but now as a campaign for her, but also, as she would always say, she'd be the first to say, for political activists around the world.
So, Marcia, what do you think about this? How do you look at actually what's happening there? Because actually, one of the things, when I saw the film, you got a sense of the very heroic and, you know, basically strong person that was there, you know, and with Nasreen, it was actually, she was just not, they weren't going to cow her, and she just pushed her way through, and she is, you know, you should tell people where she's at now, what's going on, how it's happening. I want people to understand that these are two people that actually helped to set fire in a good way in parts of the world that have been stomped on, and it continue to be stomped on, and where people suffer dramatically, and in particular women, and this was a big part of what was going on in this, so can you talk to people about that?
Well, first of all, the reason that she was arrested this time, this was actually the second time, but the first, this particular time while we were making the film, was because she was defending the women that were taking their hashis off in public, you know, protesting against the mandatory headscarf law. You know, and this is a way that they control women in Iran and in other parts of the world. And, you know, you bring up something really important because something we really wanted to address with the film is, you know, this woman is a mother. You know, she's a very compassionate human being, brilliant, a tremendous strategic lawyer. You know, her feeling about what she's doing is that she's doing it for her children and the children to come and other people's children. You know, she feels like we cannot be silent because if we're silent, you know, what's going to happen? And she's taken it upon herself, as have many other people that are in prisons in Iran. And what's fantastic about Nasreen also is that she also stands for all the other people that are in prison, too. It's not about her. It's about what's happening there for others as well. And many, many voices are, you know, oppressed there for speaking up against the government. The government is afraid of this kind of dissension, and they try and silence people, and she just refuses to be silent. And I want to say one other thing, because you touched upon it as I was sort of listening to your previous, you know, your previous interview. You know, one of the things is we were making the film, and Jeff will talk about this, you know, after the election in 2016, and, you know, the first thing that came up for me the morning after was, oh, my God, what's going to happen to our civil rights in this country? I mean, I was sick to my stomach, and it's something I feared all these last years. And making this film, you know, we were watching it happen. I mean, you can see what happens in a country where people's voices are squashed, when their civil rights are taken away. You know, there's no end to what governments will try to do to people to have power.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the situation with, I don't know which one of you would want to speak to this, but what is the situation with Nasreen right now? And I know that there's, actually, I read there was a lot of women actually going through their daily life who are actually, you know, basically sort of putting themselves in the same position, putting themselves in the same kind of, you know, standing up for Nasreen. I wanted to actually see how that actually is happening now in terms of, there's something more going on than this woman who actually is, and I'm saying actually too much because it's just really, you know, it can't be too much because this person is now, I mean, people, I don't think, do people know what's actually happened to her? I know that she's been tortured, she's been, all these other things have gone on, and there's women who are going around in the streets modeling themselves after her to actually uphold what she's doing. But there's this real effort and a really important thing for people to be doing in terms of stepping out and letting it be known that they will not stand back and tolerate this inhuman torture.
Michael, first of all, it means so much to Marcia and me that you love the film, and you know that says a lot. So I should just note that folks can see the film by going to our website, which is nazarenefilm.com, you know, www.nazarenefilm.com, and there's a quick link so you can see a film at a local Lemley Theater.
Kino Marquee.
You watch it on your own computer, but it's through a local theater to support your local theater. And also, we just released this music video that you played a bit of, sung by Angelique Kidjo, the amazing Angelique Kidjo, and written by Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty, and that's on YouTube now. And the name of the song is How Can I Tell You? And I hope that people have a chance to listen to it. That pays tribute, by the way, that music video, to other activists around the world, because Nasreen always wanted this film to be not just about herself, but about others. And you asked about how she's doing now. She'd been very, very ill. She had been in Indian prison. She had a heart condition. She had been on a hunger strike. And then one day the leaders of the authorities said to her, hey, we're going to take you to a hospital. And they put her in a car, and instead of taking her to a hospital, they drove her to a worse prison. And in that other prison, she got COVID. She was home briefly on a health care leave with COVID and the heart condition, but then abruptly they sent her back. Just this morning, she was released on a brief home visit for some medical care, but we anticipate that she'll be back in prison after that. And, you know, it's heartbreaking, you know, when you know her, when you know her children, you know how much she loves her family, when you know what they're doing to her to see this happening. But it shows, as Marcia was saying, you know, her incredible strength and resilience, and this amazing woman in Iran, who is really a model for all of us. We had a chance to work with John Lewis on a couple of occasions, and the only other person I've ever met who has that sort of glow, you know, as a person and as an activist. You know, the two don't necessarily go together, but to have that quality one-on-one and publicly is Nasreen Sotoudeh.
All right, Jeff, we're going to have to wrap this up really quick. I'm sorry we're running out of time here, but I want to once again tell people what the film is, how they can see it, and why they should see it.
Well, thank you. First of all, we have a website, nazarenefilm.com, and on there are links to get tickets. So you just go there and say, watch film, and it will take you to places where you can see the movie in movie theaters, and also later this month it will be out on VOD, so it will be there on Amazon and iTunes and a lot of other things. And I think it's important. She's not as well known as in this country as she should be, and I think she's really a role model, you know, for anybody that cares about, you know, human rights and women's rights and political activism and for getting engaged, you know, in making a difference in your society.
And if I could just quickly add that one of the things we wanted to show is, you know, there's this horrible demonization of Iran and demonization of Islam, and we wanted to show that that's not the real Iran. That's a story that's put out for false political purposes. And So one of the things the film does is it shows you a side of Iran that you've never seen before. And one of the things Marsh and I talked about with Nasreen many times was that the leaders of a country are not necessarily the people of the country. And so we hope that it'll take you to a place that you haven't seen before, even though you've seen the name.
Yeah, I mean, we have found that many people, you know, most people know nothing about Iran except what they read in the newspaper here. And Iran is a very beautiful country with a vibrant culture, you know, with people that are rebelling against society. They are protesting. And, you know, it's important that people see that.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, I'm getting the signal that we got to wrap up, but I want to thank you both very much for the film, for being on the show this time, and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Okay, thank you. All right, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm Michael Slate, and we are wrapping it up now, folks, and I'll talk to you again next week. Really looking forward to that one.
And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to share your thoughts and ideas about the show, or if you want to volunteer to be part of the show, write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com.
Troubled times.